some change.
Welcome everybody to the show. I'm your host, Jeff Raines, joined as always with one of my great co-hosts, Patrick Polo, down there. Patrick, Matt's not with us tonight due to being out of town, but guys, let me introduce a guy that I've followed, been a fan of, supporter of for some time now. You've seen him in many FSU shows, all over social media. You've probably read numerous articles he's written. Guys, that honestly, he bleeds garnet and gold. You know, I want to welcome Taylor from Norvell Central. Taylor, how you been?
Pretty good, man. How about y'all? Y'all doing pretty well. I really appreciate the opportunity to come on and talk about Florida State sports because, like you see, I'm pretty passionate. I've done it for quite some time and just super excited to get on and kind of talk about a new audience with everyone and just kind of get to know me a little bit better.
Yeah. Patrick, you doing all right?
Yeah, I'm glad to have you on. Listen, I've been following your Twitter for ages. It's good to finally put a face to the name and see the guy that really leads us good. And I mean, it's been a great week. I mean, sports haven't been great this week, but we'll talk about that later.
Taylor, we basically do kind of the same thing. You know, you and I, Patrick, we cover FSU. We're not big names. You know, we're kind of small names. We're not the big ones. We don't claim to be big. We don't claim to, you know, be the top guys. You know, we don't claim to really know what recruits, you know, are doing. But me and you both have been to the Moore Center on the weekends where there's no football. We've battled the elements, rubbed elbows with those guys, you know, the recruiting guys. You mentioned that you were there this past weekend during the Legacy Weekend outside the Moore Center. How was the vibe and the feel from some of the recruits? What do you got to say about who you talked to?
It was actually pretty amazing to see Jermaine Johnson with his brick ceremony. I thought that was really cool to see. Having Mike Norvell talk to all of the recruits out there, just talking about his commitment to Florida State, even though he only played for a year there, and he was kind of bought into the process. I think that was really cool to see. Some of those recruits were kind of looking back at it, seeing a guy like Jameis Winston, who had been there, won a Heisman Trophy, won a national championship, had been successful at Florida State. And you're just seeing kind of the trade-off there. I know a lot of people are talking about Jalen Ramsey and Derwin James didn't make the appearance up there this past weekend. They had a little bit of a couple of things going on, and, you know, you saw the Jalen Ramsey trade with everything going on there. But just kind of looking at some of the guys that were there for the recruits, and I think it was a big weekend for Florida State to kind of get involved with some of those recruitments because, as we know from last year, with Keldrick Falk as well going to Auburn, you're missing out on a couple of those highly touted guys, and Florida State kind of wants to redeem itself this upcoming season, and I think they can really do that with a couple of those talented prospects that came this weekend.
Yeah. Well, I mean, out of some of the recruits that you talked to, what was your kind of feel? Because the weekend I was there, you know, I spoke to some, but I spoke to a bunch of parents, and you know, they love the atmosphere and how the staff made them feel at home and really just the vibe. What was you hearing?
Yeah, so a lot of times when you look at guys like Luke Crumenhawk, he came in, immediately was talking to Mike Norvell, talking to Tony Cocarts, also had his dad and mom there. I thought it was a very good relationship-wise because you want him to be the leader of the class. You had a guy like Cam Davis who talked about how he wanted to shut his recruitment down. I think that was very big in terms of having some of those guys in. Then you had a guy like Jonathan Daniels, who I think is a big – Pensacola guy down there, offensive tackle. They really, really like him. Alex Atkins wants to add three or four guys in this class in the offensive line. And then you got a guy like Jason Zandamella. His coach, offensive line coach, actually has came to Florida State numerous of times because of Lucas Simmons coming over, being that highly touted recruit that Florida State has had in this past. And I think it's really big because you've got a couple of guys like James Madison, the four-star receiver out of St. Thomas Aquinas as well. You got guys like Josiah Trader, who is a five-star receiver that you really, really need to get in good spirits with. And then the highly touted prospect that everybody talks about and had a couple of crystal balls from Steve Wilfong and some other guys as well. And that's Charles Lester, the five-star cornerback. I think this is a guy that you really have to get. And then when you look at some of the guys and you're interviewing some of those guys, they all talk about the excitement that Florida State has, their energy level. And they talk about how Mike Norvell, even when you talk to him, it'll be 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and he'll say, good morning with an emphatic yell. You know, everyone knows where he's at, what he's doing. I mean, it is just energy level is high up in the air. You talk about a guy like Peyton Pierce, the four-star linebacker out of Texas. This was his first visit to Florida State, and he talked about how much of a great visit this was. He didn't even think Florida State was going to be in consideration for his recruitment. And now that he had that visit and had that kind of personal experience with some of those guys, now he's wanting to come back and actually do a little bit more there. So I think that's very big with some of that going on there. And I'm going to ask this to both of y'all as well. Do you think with the recruiting class that we have this upcoming year and talking about the 10-3 season we just had, do you think some of that momentum is kind of rubbing off on last season going into this upcoming season, just with the expectations that Florida State has in terms of being ACC championship contenders, possible playoff contenders? Do you think any of that kind of championship level expectations is kind of rubbing off on some of these recruits?
Patrick, I'll let you answer that.
Yeah, I honestly think it does. I mean, we've all heard, you know, the whole can Mike recruit spiel, and you know, there's some factors playing it. And I think we need to show we could win. And when you win, that's when the people start paying attention to you. And I think that's a direct correlation. You know, yeah, some of these other coaches with these big name hires, yeah, they get those names down there right away. I get it. You know, most people didn't know who Mike was when we hired him, and building those relationships. So it takes time. And I think the 10-3 changed that. It's like, okay, yeah, this is actually working. And kids want to be part of that bigger change, or at least I think they want to be part of that bigger change. Say, hey, we're going to get that championship back. And I think that's carrying that momentum. It's getting the kids excited. And it's nice thing that, you know, we're starting to get that brand back out into the Texas area, you know. And then, like you said, the biggest thing of Charles Lester, we're going to break that damn curse of, you know, losing these five-star quarterback or corners. I mean, that one, I'll be stressed till signing day, till that ink is on that paper. Even if he says I'm 100% in. But I think that excitement's carrying. And especially if we carry off the season, we started off great, we finish September undefeated, I think it's going to, I mean, we're going to get kids that didn't know about us or weren't considering us, definitely considering us then, fighting for their spots.
So, Patrick, I had a question for you, just kind of what you were talking about before with like sweating about Charles Lester potentially, you know, to the end of signing day, if he does commit to Florida State and everything kind of runs smoothly. We got a guy in four-star safety, Jordan Pride, who was at Bluntstown, moved over to IMG, back to Bluntstown, Gators kind of connection there. You know, he came in for a visit this past weekend, really loved what he saw. I actually met him at the baseball game up there with Buster Posey's jersey retirement and everything like that. But he was very excited to be on campus. But are you kind of worried about that? Is that another prospect that you're kind of saying, oh, I don't really know if we're going to be sweating bullets with that, because you got him and CJ Hurd in the class. They're probably going to get two or three more defensive backs in this class with Patrick Surtain, newly hired defensive backs coach in there. Do you think there's any kind of concern with that?
There might be a little bit with him with the Gators there, that a little bit of connection. I think it's because Lester's the top-rated one, and we've been in the mix every time. I think that's the worry on that one. If he was not the top dog, it probably wouldn't be as stressful. And I think that's where Jordan falls into that thing. It's like, hey, he's not the number one guy that we could lose out again. That's that worry on that one. You know, I think with the new coach, that should lock a lot of these kids down, the excitement he's bringing to them. You know, some of the interviews I've read, they're excited about him, and he's showing what he can do and how he can get them to the league.
Patrick, I'm going to piggyback off that. I agree with you, because you look, 2 years in a row, we lost. I'm not even going to mention his name. You know, he's getting frostbite up there in Colorado. And then last year, or this past year, you know, Keldrick Falk from Highland Home, which, good Lord, the kid was an athlete. We actually, where I coach at here in Alabama, we actually game planned for him, hoping not to face him. But watching him, because they play in the same area or region we do. But really, to answer your question, Taylor, in my eyes, I think the year we went 5-7, the way we ended that year, help springboard this year and start bringing the recruits in. Because if you look at it, you know, would we have had a Jared Verse come in, you know, if there wasn't a lot of progression, you know, and, you know, Hakeem Williams this year, you know, with the 10-3, that helped bolster it also. But you look at the recruiting boards through the years, and you and me and Patrick, we've done that. You know, this year is kind of odd because last year when you looked at the boards, a bunch of these kids that are now crystal balling it to Florida State or giving us that good look, not just the whole, you know, that's the kid over there, let me look at them just to make them happy. I think that's progressing to that now, you know, and I think the 5-7, as bad as it was for losing year, I think that kind of got our foot going in the right direction. Then we come in hot with that 10-3, and now the sky's the limit. I've told a lot of people, and I even told one of the former players I interviewed not too long ago, this recruiting class, well, last recruiting class and this recruiting class reminds me a lot of that 96, 97, 95 classes that really built the foundation for the dynasty that we've seen, you know, the Donald Heaven, the P-Dubs, the Snoops, and all that. I think if we can continue to keep the winning way going, sky's the limit for this program, because you've got a coach, like you said, you know, he's 90 to nothing, balls to the wall everywhere he goes. And you and I have seen that, Patrick's seen that. I mean, whenever I was there that weekend for the first junior day, it was 52 degrees outside, and that dude's running around like he's on the beach somewhere trying to get here and there. And me and another guy that does recruiting for another site, we're over there shaking like we're in the Arctic Circle, and there's Mike Norvell running around like it's nothing. So I think, yeah, it's helped. I think if we can continue to build off of it, I think the sky's the limit for us in the recruiting aspect.
Do you think there is a possibility that we could land into that top 10 type of environment? Because, I mean, you talk about it. I mean, we've had a lot of those 5- and 4-star guys coming into the program and coming onto campus saying how much they love the program. You know, it's a give or take kind of thing. I mean, probably have to find some things going your right way. You might have to have like a 5-star receiver, Jeremiah Smith and JoJo Trader and guys like that, that are probably going to have to join the program for that to be a possibility. Because you also have to think about on the other side with the transfer portal, how important that is and how much they want to keep acquiring those transfer portal prospects. But do y'all think there is a possibility of that top 10 classification for this year?
Most definitely. I do, because, I mean, you look at the climb, really. No pun intended, but the climb that we've been on, it's been moving in the right direction. If you look at, I mean, you kind of compare it to Bobby Bowden's time, you know, through the 80s, he was building that foundation for it through recruiting and all that. But he had to win, which he did. Mike Norvell's building that. And the thing that I love about this is Mike Norvell, every recruit, parent, I like to talk to the parents. That's who really kind of sways the player, the kid, every now and then. Every one of them loves Mike Norvell's energy and how he treats them. And I had a recruit's parent. I'm not going to say which one it is because, Taylor, you know, just like I do, it's all about relationships with them. That said that they've been to other schools that it was business, business, business. That's all it was. There was no family atmosphere. And I think, you know, Mike Norvell, Adkins, and all of them keeps recruiting with that family atmosphere. I honestly think it's going to pull in them 5-star recruits like you mentioned. And this year, yeah, I can see, I wouldn't say top 5, but I can see 7, 8, you know, right there in the mix. Top 10.
I'll run with it too. I don't think top 5. I mean, we still have too many big dogs ahead of us, Georgia, Bama. I mean, let's be real. They're recruiting machines right now. They're getting whoever they want. They get to pick and choose. And there's some question marks 3 through 5. I mean, you still got Ohio State. They can pretty much do whatever they want. So I think getting us in the top 10 puts us in the spot. If you factor in the transfer portal and how successful that, I mean, really, that could change how that rates. And I think I don't know where to place this this year. I mean, if you combine the transfer portal and our regular recruiting class, I mean, if we just do the law of averages, that puts us in the top 10. I mean, I think we address the needs that way. And I'm a fan, but not a fan of like, hey, this is the ranking. Because sometimes you have to recruit the needs. When you take a kicker that doesn't have any stars, that's not going to help your ranking per se. If you have to pick up a few extra linemen, it's not going to help you out. Especially their 3-stars, they don't get many 5-stars out there. So that's, I think if we address the needs more, you know, the number could be, it's mildly interesting in some cases, but to see a top 10 would be expected.
Yeah, and I mean, they are currently ranked fourth in the 247 composite rankings as of right now with 9 commits. They've got a lot of needs that they've got there. And like you said, they've got a lot of big dogs that are still out there that you're still trying to acquire. I think that's really big for Mike Norvell. And just in terms of recruiting, I think there are some blank spots, I guess you could say, in this recruiting class. I won't bash the staff too much, but tight end, a little bit question mark there. You're trying to figure out some different position groups right there. Defensive end, you know, with Florida State's track record at defensive end, you want to see a little bit more progress on the board. LJ McCray is probably the top guy there, and then it really just drops off. And then linebacker, you really don't know what you're going to get at linebacker. And Zach Smith, I mean, 3-star linebacker from Red Oak, maybe, but he's former teammates with Dylan Brown Turner. He really likes Florida State, but I mean, when you're looking at some of those guys there, I mean, you really don't have a lot of options. Peyton Pierce, if he visits Tallahassee a couple more times. But is there any kind of position groups that y'all are worried about, maybe agreeing with those three, or maybe some other position groups that maybe stand out?
I'll jump on. I'll go with the linebacker. I think that's been a position group for years that we're concerned with. And we're not even addressing it through the portal either. That's the area I'm worried about, is finding those dogs in there that have that fight in that position. And we're not doing good on that. And I don't know if that's, we don't have the right coach for that. We've got the right area recruiters that are pulling in for that. There's a lot of unknowns on that. And I think this next year will help determine, hey, where are we going as far as with that position lead, and getting those guys, the right guys in there to get those dogs that we need. My concern is definitely, I mean, offensive tackles every year. I mean, that's just a given. But linebacker is my biggest concern. I mean, because knock on wood, we've murdered the transfer portal with defensive end, so I'm not stressing that one.
I mean, to kind of piggyback off that, and one that you're not stressing about, that's one defensive end position is one I kind of worry about. We all know, everybody knows, I mean, you got to be brain dead, really, to think Jared Verse is going to come back after this coming up season. So we're losing Verse. Then who? You know, nobody really made them flashes this past year behind Verse.
I'm just telling you, and I will say this from a source I've talked to that's at practice, that's been around the team. I've also talked to a lot of players about that as well, and Patrick Payton is a guy you need to watch out for. I think this could be his breakout 7-8 sack type of season. I think he may have one more year after this, and then I think he's pretty much done. Right now, I think he's a red shirt sophomore, if I remember correctly. He has a recent number change to, I believe, 11. So just like Jermaine Johnson at that point, got a whole lot bigger in terms of his size, because at one point, I believe we recruited him and he was about 180 pounds. Now he's at, what, 235, 240? So.
Yeah. My thing, though, on that is the depth of that, like you said, Patrick, he could have a breakout season, but then you got Lamont Green Jr. who's mm-hmm. coming right behind him. And I've asked this, and Taylor, I'll ask you this one. How beneficial do you think it is for Boots, for Lamont Green Jr. to come behind Jared Verse and learn a year with Jared on his work ethic, how he puts it together? Because I've asked him, if you think about if Jared Verse was here that one year with Jermaine, mm-hmm. how much better would Jared be? You know, so what's your thoughts on that?
I mean, I honestly think if Lamont Green Jr. kind of gets behind and kind of learns and develops behind those guys, because I don't think Lamont Green Jr. is going to play his first year. I think he's going to be a year two, year three kind of guy. I think he needs to kind of get into the program, get into his own a little bit more. But he has the skill set, like you said. He's very, very talented. And having to learn behind those guys, like Jared had to learn behind Jermaine Johnson, and now Jared's going to have to take that leadership role in terms of being a skilled defensive end. Hopefully he can have the same production he had this past season. But then when you got guys like Byron Turner, who's still trying to find his way into the rotation, you know, Derek McClendon, who's still trying to find his resurrection of his career, kind of close that out as well. Gilbert Edmond, another guy they brought in from South Carolina, can he be that kind of transfer type of, you know, here's what you do as a veteran leader on this team? Maybe he can come in and be that spark plug as well. So just going to be really exciting to see and how JP kind of navigates through that lineup and everything.
Yeah, I agree. And what you mentioned, leaders, and kind of segue to a different topic. You know, leaders are not the ones that with the right position proclaim titles. You know, actual leaders are people who, you know, start acting, help, benefit, make the change like we've seen. And honestly, I don't know. I mean, I can speak for all of us. FSU will not be able to remain nationally competitive in my eyes without donations from fans, alumni, most importantly, boosters. You know, we just seen where Mike Norvell donated $1 million, part of the Ballon Society, him and his wife, Maria. Patrick, I'm going to start with you because every week we talk about boosters.
Every week.
How important is it in your eyes is that Mike Norvell stepped up to the plate and donated and became a booster, donating that $1 million.
It sets the example, guys. It's leading from the front. And, you know, I think he's wrapping up the tour. I think it finishes up in Tallahassee next week, if I remember correctly. He's showing the boosters that he's just as committed to the program as anybody else. And I got my update this week. We have over 380,000 alive alumni. You know, and we're still struggling to get to 20,000. So I think some of those people seeing that buy-in from internal will help that out. I mean, I think I texted you the second I heard it of, you know, he's given $1 million, and that just shows his commitment to the program too, to make sure that we're going to go further. You know, so stand up move in my eyes. I mean, he's done a lot to save the university money, and he's even given money back to the university. Which is a good sign. And I think it's going to help. I mean, we need every dollar to keep us competitive. We know NIL changes some of that, but still the facilities do matter to an extent, being able to do renovations. I know they're getting ready for the Doak renovations coming up over the next 2 years. So that's, you know, granted, that was a very touchy subject with people using the money from the city, but the boosters coming in to fill that gap to make it a better game day experience. And I'm all for it. I'm looking forward to seeing what the Champions Club remodel is going to look like. I'm looking forward to seeing this what the suites are. I'm not going to be able to afford them, but what the suites are going to be like on the sidelines. I mean, that's going to change our experience. It's going to help bring those dollars in to help out the school. I mean, it's needed. And, you know, I told you all the other day, my 16-year-old became a booster. So I'm proud of her. And then I actually just signed my grandson up for the junior boosters. So to your grandson, he's a booster now too. So I think it's important that we find those ways to give back to the school. And Mike led the way by, you know, a nice $1 million contribution across the different organizations. And it's interesting to see, like I said, the Bowden Society, the numbers of people that are there, that's a hefty number. So I think we need to keep pushing that. And I think Mike's going to help lead that way and wake up that call that it's important to give to the school.
I'll attest to this as well. I'll kind of allude to this first. You can ask any three of us at this point how important it is to become a Seminole booster. You can become a Seminole booster for $70 a year. That is like $5.60 a month. Like, what are you doing with $5.65 a month that you cannot contribute? And you can say my $70 a month my $70 a year does not matter. But in the long run, those smaller donations really, really matter. I'm not saying you have to go out and be like Mike Norvell and donate $1 million. Not saying you had to be like Willie Taggart and donate $1 million. I am saying, though, if you want this program to be successful, everything relies on funding at that point. And you have to understand the resources that are given to this program. And if we want to succeed as a program, we have to be all in together. And I think Mike Norvell is setting an example in saying, okay, we have to elevate our program standards. We talk about with Michael Alford, with his transition to try to go to the Big Ten and the SEC. We talked about conference realignment with that situation and how far the ACC is kind of behind at this point. And you're playing catch up. Florida State's doing a lot with their football-only facility. They're doing a lot with Doak. They're doing a lot with a lot of different things that are going on in terms of nutrition and everything else for the student-athletes as well. scholarships, there's a big kind of proponent in terms of being a booster. And I think it's very rewarding in terms of seeing Florida State be successful on and also off the field as well. And I think that just kind of gives back and kind of shows the commitment that Mike Norvell has to this program and how much trust and belief Michael Alford has in him as well.
I agree with that. You know, you look at it, you divide it all up, that's about $50,000, you know, dispersed against all 20 programs. Yeah, $50,000 doesn't seem like a lot when you look at the grand scheme of the programs, but any little bit helps. And that's honest to God truth, you know. But I just got a question. Can we give Willie his million back and just call it even? You know, now, I mean, I'm just saying, just give it to him back, call it even. No more buyout payments. Let it be gone. But it's a big thing. You know, being a booster is an important thing. You know, the game day experiences, just the simple nutrition things. You know, how many times have we, last year, did we run into injuries and all that? Booster money, you know, helps with all that. You know, facilities, these kids, you know, just helping them out and all that. Just, it helps build the program. You look at schools like Alabama, Clemson. They've got major booster buy-in. And it's like, Patrick, you know, you've said it before, it's kind of an embarrassment almost to see how many alumni we got, and we can't even get, what, 20,000 boosters?
So, yeah, we're not even at 5% of alumni. And, I mean, that's, yeah. I don't want to call people out because, you know, sometimes they get frowned upon that, but I think we can do better. And I think that might start with our leadership in the booster program of getting the student boosters. That's a big thing I've seen a late push on lately, is the students that are there becoming boosters and getting them to join that life commitment. And then, you know, I like to call out the fans. I've done it before on Facebook posts. They're like, oh, I complain about this. I'm like, are you a booster? Are you contributing? Are you trying to help the problem? Or are you just complaining? You know, Let's put the money where the mouth is and make the positive change we need to make.
I mean, and Patrick Taylor, I mean, Taylor, you're on Facebook too, ain't you?
Yeah, I see it a lot. And I tell people all the time that, you know, money's tight. I get it. Financial hardships are kind of hard at times for certain individuals. I get it. Circumstances happen. But at the same time, what are you doing with $5 and so-and-so cents a month? It adds up. So, I mean, let's just say, for example, 50 people donate $70 a year. I mean, that adds up, I mean, in the grand scheme of things. So, I mean, you have to start somewhere. And, I mean, that can add up to something special. So,
I mean, you look at some of these Facebook groups that's got 6,000, 7,000, 8,000 members. I mean, yeah, we got one, but we're like 500, 600 members. But
mm-hmm.
If the admins or the people that's supposed to be passionate about Florida State that's running them, just challenge your members. $70. It ain't nothing. Just think of, I mean, we'd be at the 20,000 mark in no time, really. And then all the supporters on Facebook that, you know, follow, you know, you Taylor, me, all, you know, everybody else, you know, we would be surpassed 20,000 if everybody that really claimed to be Bleeding Garnet and Gold would just pitch in just $70. I mean, income tax season, people, that's nothing, you know. But moving on from that, we all three seen the announcement today. 2024 season opens up somewhere a little different. We're going to Dublin, Ireland, face Georgia Tech. Taylor, what's your thoughts on that announcement and us really going that far to play a game that we could have played 200 and something miles away?
Well, let me ask you this. So the announcement came through and a lot of people were kind of frustrated because you have a lot of Atlanta Seminole fans, you know, you have the Seminole Club and everything down there. It's a very, very diverse population of Florida State fans. But I'm going to open it up to both of y'all. When is the last time Florida State football has won at Georgia Tech? Do you want to take a guess?
Years.
Long time.
2002. I want a change of scenery. I want our brand to be promoted in a positive manner. You talk about moving different conferences and elevating your program to new heights, you're giving an experience to a student athlete that probably will never get another experience to move out of the country or go travel out of the country ever in his lifetime. Now you're giving them the opportunity, plus some of the training staff and equipment staff and everything like that. You're giving a whole lot of opportunities for other people. And I think it only elevates your program in terms of having those fans and other people along the country. There's some Noel fans in Ireland as well. I mean, they finally get to see their Noles compete at a high level, especially at a place that may not have college football talking about as much. So I love the idea. I've seen some flatback about, you know, why not Atlanta and stuff like that, but I'm all for it. I think it's a good way to elevate the program at a high level and kind of a fun, creative way. Probably will never happen again. So kind of cherish your moments there.
My thing I want to say to those fans that are griping about it, you know, why not Atlanta? And I hate to say this, but it's not our home game that we gave up. It's Georgia Tech's home game they gave up. So really, go beat down their administration's doors and figure out why they gave up a home game and deprived y'all of the chance to watch the Noles. Hopefully not get a field goal kick or block. You know, not, I hated that game. But, Patrick, what's your thoughts on that?
You know, so I get the whole Atlanta thing. I mean, that's in my backyard. I mean, it's closer for me to go to Georgia Tech than it is to Tallahassee. I get it. I'm sure it's going to be financially lucrative for us to go to Dublin. I'm sure it's going to be, there's going to be some bonuses tied to that. It's, you know, I'm intrigued to see what's going to come out with that. We definitely had our ducks in a row. I mean, cause shortly after the announcement, I got an email, you'll reserve your ticket by April 1st. So they're on it. I think it's a good move. It sucks. It's, you know, we're giving up to Atlanta. It would have been awesome if maybe we could have kept Atlanta and had somebody else go to Ireland instead. But hey, we're not the decision makers on that. But I'm sure that it was made worth our while for us to go there. And so I'm intrigued to see what the payout's going to be for that. Cause it's interesting. And I'll say and I'm on my Facebook and it was something about the Georgia Tech fans about the game. And all of them were like, man, it was the last time we played there. It was great. It was such a great environment. So I'm like, hey, I'm excited for it. You know, I already have my calendar circled for the first day I can book my plane ticket. But, you know, I think it's going to be good. It's going to be week zero. So it should be probably the only game on. So that puts the spotlight back on us again in a positive way.
I will also add to that as well. There is a positive development with that also because Florida State now gets two bye weeks instead of one. So more rest, more kind of a retooling with a lot of things. That schedule in 2024 is not very great non-conference wise. I think we play Notre Dame in Florida. So, you know, give it how it is there. So,
and we got Clemson at home that year.
Mm-hmm.
So that'd be a great time to have a bye.
Yep.
Week up in that game. But I mean, I like it. I mean, I'm not against it by no means. I mean, Taylor, me and you, we live really pretty close together. We didn't realize that until the day.
Yeah. I had no idea. Yeah.
So, I mean, me and you are only separated by probably about a 45-minute drive. And mm-hmm. from here to Atlanta is about 3.5, depending on how my wife drives.
I yep. drive
4 hours. So, yeah, I mean, I'd have liked to have seen the Atlanta game. But, I mean, just think, I mean, say all three of us went. I mean, that's a once-in-a-lifetime thing that – how many times can we say we went to Dublin, Ireland? You know, none. You know, that's a once-in-a-lifetime thing. So I'm not against it. And plus, like you said, it gives the student athletes and the training staff, all that chance to go there, chance to visit places. Because wasn't it the Marching Chiefs a few years ago played on Normandy Beach on D-Day?
Mm-hmm.
That's something they'll live and remember forever. So I'm not against it. I know.
Yeah, you also have the Tate Rodemaker Heisman hype for next year too, as well. You can take that to Ireland and go down that road if you wanted to as well. So,
wow, that was good.
I'm gonna ask the question because I seen somebody on Twitter, ask it. I think it's another guy you do a show with, Taylor. I think the Fearing the Spear. I think ask it. Mm-hmm. Who's going to be the starting quarterback in your eyes? Next year,
I definitely think it's Tate. I definitely think you side with veteran experience at that point. I think Duffy's maybe a year or two away at that point. Brock Glenn showed some flashes in camp so far. We'll see how that kind of develops with everything. And then Luke Crumhawk, of course, with him being a true freshman coming in, if he does enroll at Florida State, that's another obstacle you have to go there. And you got four scholarship quarterbacks. I think Tate's probably the most inclined to step into that next level. I think that's probably your best bet there.
What about you, Patrick?
I would like to see Tate bulk up some. Looks a little on the smaller side there to take some of the beatings. But he balled out at Louisville. I think he has the talent. I mean, he played down the road at Valdosta. So I know he's got the skills and, you know, definitely had a great skill set to go there. And I know a lot of people get flack for him and the some of the boneheaded plays he made before. But I think Tate probably will get it for the veteran leadership. I mean, I haven't seen much from AJ to unseat that.
I agree with Tate because you see, you take a backup quarterback coming into Louisville. Yeah, Louisville wasn't a very strong team past season. That's still a hostile environment on a Friday night. And for him to come in and really just totally change the game. I mean, he took over that game and just showed everybody why he was recruited by Norvell to Florida State. And I agree. I think Tate will be just veteran leadership and him kind of knowing in the offseason after Jordan leaves and all that, that really in his eyes, it's his team. I think he'll take a step in that leadership and that maturity role, just taking another step towards the right direction and leading this program. I mean, I like what I see when I watch him. Patrick said, you know, the earlier stuff, but in the early times, you know, he was young and they were still trying to learn this offense, trying to learn everything about it. And I think he'll be fine. I'm just worried about what else we can have to replace.
Do you think with the elevation of, let's just say, a Tate going into next season, do you think he can kind of develop that relationship with a guy like Hakeem Williams or do you think there's anybody like one of the younger receivers that are going to step up in terms of being that next guy? Because, you know, Micah Pittman with his hip injury, wish him a speedy recovery as he goes through that. And then you also got with Johnny Wilson as well leaving after this past season as well. Do you think anybody like maybe a Hakeem Williams, Vandrevious Jacobs, you know, different guys like that can step up?
I'm very high on both of those. Hakeem, just because he's Hakeem. I mean, what other recruit had two of the greatest receivers in Florida State history show up to his signing? But I think Tate, you know, in the offseason, Tate will probably step up and start running the player-only, you know, practices and stuff like that and develop that. Other than that, I think Brock Glenn, really, in my eyes, would be the one to step up to try to build that chemistry and get that rapport with him and try to keep building the program in the way that it needs to be. I like Duffy. I love Duffy. I hope he proves me wrong. I like Tate year after Jordan after this year. And really, I like what I've seen in Brock in his high school film. And really what I've seen, you know, just in some of the film and footage, just, you know, we've seen from camp, he's impressing me for as young as he is. How about you, Patrick?
Yeah, I've been trying to stay up on it. And, yeah, the name Brock, his name's been coming up a lot of some good talent there. And it'll be interesting to see when Luke gets in, how he, you know, of his true freshman year, how is he going to, you know, I've kind of been high on him since, you know, Mike spotted him and offered him. And you look where he plays from. And so, it'll be interesting. It'll finally be a good problem to have that we have a bunch of quarterbacks that we really have to choose from versus, you know, what one quarterback do we have left that can kind of possibly play a little bit of football. So the competition play out, I think that'll be good. And now that they're learning to know the offense, at least for like Tate and Jordan, I think it's going to give Tate more experiences this spring with the ones. I think Jordan's going to kind of get a little more time off of that. And start getting that that backup's ready, because you never know. But it'll be interesting between Brock and AJ after Tate goes. And hell, we don't know where Luke's going to even be at that point. You know, assuming Luke comes here.
Well, I mean, Taylor, you mentioned it earlier, you know, you wished him a speedy recovery, but Micah Pittman, we, you know, he announced, you know, on his blog, he's going to miss probably, 4 to 6 months
mm-hmm.
with a hip injury, had surgery. I think it was a labrum tear or something. When I first heard it, I immediately, first thing in my mind was, okay, next man up mentality. Just the amount of production you're losing in that early part of the season from Micah, you know, looking at 32 catches, 330 yards.
Hmm.
That's 10.3 yards of reception, 3 touchdowns. He had 7 rushes, 35 yards, 5 yards of carry. Really, what strikes me and worries me is his return game. 18 returns, 169 yards. He averaged about 9.4 yards per return. Didn't have an issue catching the ball. And really, you know, from years past, we've all kind of, when the punt was in the air, we all started sweating. No big mess ups. You know, big shoe to fill. Very valuable in my eyes. You know, he does a lot of stuff that don't really get recorded on the stat sheet. I mean, I don't know how many times I watched him lead block on a run and just get smeared. Taylor, I'm just going to ask you, how big is it for us to lose him in that early portion, you know, with LSU coming in or coming up? And who do you think, just off the top of your head, could step into that role as the number, as that number two slot, you know, receiver for Norvell and for these Noles?
Yeah, so everybody kind of wants to talk about who's going to replace him. And the truth of the matter is, you can't really replace his production in terms of being one of the better blockers in the receiver group as well. Does a phenomenal job, like you said, with the punt return. We didn't see a punt hit the ground, and that was something that, you know, you could say a couple of years ago that, man, we just want somebody to catch the ball. And that's really important going forward there. And I want to kind of allude to a guy that I thought was going to be able to make a return last season off of his injury from the car accident with Winston Wright Jr. I think that's a situation where I think he's going to have to really step up. And in practice, I've actually heard Norvell has kind of hit the limit with him in terms of, okay, you know, you have to push and continue to get better. And he's going to keep pushing and continuing to try to get him better as this camp kind of follows through, because you really think about it. I mean, Ja'Kai Douglas is probably the other option there. And I do like Ja'Kai Douglas. Miami fans can tell you right away, him and the little wheel routes that he had. But, I mean, when you look at the other slot receivers that we have on the roster, there's not a whole lot of options there. And you're starting to kind of sweat a little bit kind of thinking. And, yeah, I think Winston Wright is probably going to be your best option, the most capable receiver. I think he had about 688 yards and 6 touchdowns at West Virginia's last year before he came here. Was supposed to be the most productive receiver. Car accident happened. But his dad remains pretty confident whenever I've spoken to him as well. Saying that there is going to be a pretty much bounce back season. He's ready for the kind of redemption year that he's going to have, and he's wanting NFL. So we'll see.
Yeah, the key you said that we don't see on the stat sheet is the blocking. And I was always blocking his backside off. And who's going to fill that void is my question. I think Winston Wright he's a good kick returner. I believe he ran back some for West Virginia. So that fills that void there, probably on the punts too. Production-wise, I think as a slot, yeah, it's just who's going to block is, you know, I'll throw it out there. And it's that kind of that Swiss Army knife, Jaheim Bell. Is he going to fill that slot? I that's a possibility. It might be a committee thing of, you know, what are we really after? And I don't want to identify, you know, players, personnel and say, okay, yeah, this receiver is going to block on this play. But I think that's our biggest void is who's going to block better than Mekhi.
Do you think Antron Poitier is going to be that type of situation? I know we don't talk about him a whole lot, but he's a physical receiver. Maybe can piece everything together.
I didn't think of that.
I like Kenton. I also like Darian Williamson. You know, didn't he get? He got injured this year, this past year.
Yeah,
showing flashes when he played.
Yeah,
showed flashes when he was in. But Kenton is another. I mean, for a slot receiver, you want him to kind of be what we call it, coaching a hybrid scat back. Really, mm-hmm. You know, you want to be able to send him on the jet sweep. You want him to really, and what Michael was dangerous at. Third and short, you know, the little slant route, he was dangerous there. That was his favorite route, you know. But with Winston Wright, he's speed. You know, we seen it with Ja'Kai, like you mentioned, with Miami. I mean, really, he set up the play before the whole debacle with the 4th and 14. You know, he caught that wheel route on the really on that right there at the out of bounds line, just kept going up the sideline. I think Winston Wright would be a good one to keep at a slot just because you have Winston Wright there. Then Mike Norvell don't have to lean so much really or depend so heavily on Johnny Wilson on a third down pass attempt. You know, he's got that other threat that's got some speed to him. Then, like we mentioned, you know, Kenton Portier and Williamson, I think those could be viable for the other ones. I think Bell, I think he'll be good, you know, like just a tight end to flare out or H-back type role. But I like Winston right in there, especially on kick returns, because he's got speed. And when he was at West Virginia, that was really one of his major roles. But my heart of heart, I love the guy Douglas on anything because he's been here. We've seen him through. Was your COVID season and since. It's like he's right there on the cusp of that breakout. We all see it. And that's who my heart's pulling for. And plus, he's kind of, you see it in Miami, I don't know how many other games we can name. I mean, just a handful. That's just, if it wasn't for him doing just looking back and coming back to the quarterback, the drive would have been over. But if he was there, he kind of bailed us out with his good hands. Able to cut some breaks and blocks and all that, and make something out of nothing. And really, if you're going to replace Micah Pittman in the early part, I'd like to see Ja'Kai really step up into that.
Yeah, I would love to see Vandrevious Jacobs kind of step into that role as well. But as a true freshman, he's only about 170 pounds at that point. Lightning speed in the slot. Call him All Day Dre. I mean, he is that type of speed. He is phenomenal in terms of getting into the open field. They've really impressed so far with him in camp, but can he be able to kind of piece everything together? Not really sure. I think they kind of side with, like you said, some of those veterans. And this is a veteran team. They want to win a championship. So championship hopes are on the line. You have to kind of swing to your veterans and kind of see what happens. So.
Yeah, I mean, well, that builds your depth, you know. Looking back at before the transfer portal, you had that. You very seldom seen a true freshman start. You know, I mean, look at Jameis. Jameis sat for 1 year, redshirted, you know, scout team, and then we seen what he done the year after. It gave him time to learn the playbook. Am I saying that, you know, Jacobs or Hakeem Williams and all these other ones can't produce then? No, but I would love to see them sit back a little bit for a year, learn the playbook, learn how it rolls, then, you know, learn from the veteran experience. But this leads me to a question, and Taylor, I'll ask you this one. If you're in that predicament, do you prefer to have a receiver who can get the tough conversions, like the third and shorts, or do you want one that can go vertical and give you another deep threat?
I want someone that can give me the tough third down conversions at that point. I mean, when you got to have it in some of those type of situations, I mean, you talk about those moments in Louisville before Jordan Travis got hurt. He was throwing it up to Johnny Wilson, making him go fight for contested passes. And even when Tate Rodemaker was out there, I mean, he was your go-to guy in terms of getting that. And I think that's what they got in Jaheim Bell as well. Can play at running back, can play at tight end, can play at slot receiver, outside receiver. I mean, you name it, and he's going to be there playing for them in some form or fashion. I think that's kind of the other side that you can kind of turn to. not saying that he's going to be a, you know, a starting wide receiver, because he's clearly going to be one of the tight ends there. But I mean, if they feel confident in what they do in Marquise and Douglas, like I've heard several times with that, maybe a Kyle Morlock as well. And then you also had a Jaheim Bell on the outside at wide receiver, a three tight end set. Man, that would be kind of scary, unique, but scary.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to plan against that.
Patrick, which one would you prefer? You want a conversion type receiver, or do you want a little Sonic the Hedgehog lightning bolt that can shoot down the field and hopefully you can, you know, throw it in front of him?
I mean, we all get excited when the ball gets in the air. We all get nervous also for those long, deep passes. I mean, some of these safeties can cover. I just want to get the first down. I don't want to get flashy. I would like it to the point that we could just line up and just smash the ball down their throat and not have to worry about a throw and conversion on that. But I would rather have someone that's going to short hand, that's going to get me to the first down or just past the first down. And then I think with that receiving core, they're not going to be able to double up on anybody. So it's going to leave so many options that they might double down on, hey, we're going to stop them at the first down. And there's going to be Johnny just strolling down the sideline over a 5'9 DB.
I will say this too. If you would have asked me this back in 2020, with some of our receivers not being able to create separation for themselves, and Pokey Wilson being your top wide receiver with like a 380 yards, I would have definitely chose the get separation and blow past you. But now I'm at the point now where I think these wide receivers can do both. And I also think that there is going to be some times where in a competitive ACC where you're looking at Clemson, you know, you're having to create that third and 10 situation and Jordan's got to throw it up to somebody to get a first down and kind of steal the game. Who are you going to go to at that point? And it's, you got your 6'7" wide outs, you got your 6'3"s. There's a lot of talent on this team, and I think they can go in and get that first down for you.
You also got a 6'7" tight end in Morlock too.
Yep.
I mean,
put them two on the outside. Like, oh my God, that'd be hilarious.
That's, I mean, you're going to get a lot there. Oh yeah. And just with the as many weapons as Jordan Travis is going to have this year, when you look at the receiving portion of it, you're going to get a lot of one high safety looks, because you're going to have, they're going to roll one over to Johnny Wilson's side to try to cut him down. You're going to have a lot of one on one matchups on the opposite side and for that slot receiver. You're going to have, you know, that defensive back or that outside linebacker nickel kind of role that can't cover a Jaheim Bell. I mean, as long as the offensive front can give Jordan Travis three and a half good seconds, I mean, I ain't saying it, but I'm ready to book a couple tickets, you know, because this offense and with the defense coming back, I think it's going to be an electric year and something that really we've all been waiting for as Florida State fans.
Yeah, I'm kind of super excited to see how the defense kind of performs this season, because I know we have some Adam Fuller hatred on Twitter and on Facebook and on certain media platforms. And I know Coach Fuller is doing a tremendous job with some of the efforts that we've had so far. He has gone a long way from the 2020 season where we only had 11 sacks in 10 games. You know, he has come a long way from that at that point, has developed to All-American basically defensive ends at this point as well. His secondary has lost Jamie Robinson. You know, that's going to be a big factor in terms of Florida State's defense this year. He meant a lot to the team in terms of having that returning production. Now he's going to the NFL, trying to find ways to be successful on defense. How will you do it? And I think that's a big thing. You got a lot of guys returning for next season. I believe 8 starters on the defense side of the ball. So you're really going to have to factor in what you're going to do. And I've heard a lot of kind of people talking around the program that I wouldn't rule out the 5 defensive linemen in your defensive sets sometimes to bring it out there. So maybe replacing one of those defensive backs, bring another defensive lineman in there, because the defensive line is such a strength of this team. When you're looking at this defense, do you think there is a quote-unquote strength of this team, like defensive tackle, defensive end, linebacker, you know, corner, safety, anything like that?
Defensive tackle. I like Darryl Jackson from what I'm hearing from camp about how his big I think I heard the other day that he opened up, he kind of consumed a double team, which let Tatum Bethune come in for an easy sack on Jordan. So if he can do that during the game and you've got Fabian Lovett and the rest of, I mean, was it Fisk? Like you said, the five defensive tackle front. You look at a goal line situation. What was it? The Miami game, the 4th and 14, right there at the goal line. You have to have a stop. You know, with them five defensive tackles we've got, dear Lord, they better get ready to replace some grass and goat, because they're going to dig a big trench up and move offensive lines back. And I love the defensive tackles we've got.
Well, let me say this too. I hope Darrell Jackson does not cover a running back out of the backfield in Fuller's scheme with this, because he got exposed at Miami on some of those plays. And I like Darrell Jackson. I've spoken to him several times throughout Florida State, several recruitments with him. They have basically recruited him three separate times. And finally, this last time, they were able to accept him in because of his mom's situation there. Wish her nothing but the best as well, as he kind of goes through that process too, because you never can tell about certain family members. You always want to make sure that they are safe. And I definitely wish his family nothing but the best. But it's just a really remarkable situation with him having to reunite with Joshua Farmer, former high school teammates. They were very, very close to one another. They talked about playing at Florida State together and playing whatever university they can get into together. Didn't really turn out that way. It turned out going to Maryland, turned around and go to Miami, and then next thing you know, he's at Florida State back in terms with his high school teammate. Do you think that relationship with him and Joshua Farmer is going to kind of pay dividends this season, or do you think it's going to kind of not really be as effective as everybody kind of thinks with that?
I think some of those high school partnerships are a little overhyped.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't buy that. I mean, it's a familiar face to help him through this transition, everything. My question though, has his waiver been approved yet? I haven't seen that.
It is fuzzy right now. I do not think it has been. Demetrio Emmanuel, I know for a fact, has not been accepted his waiver just yet. That's why he has not been dressing out for camp. So they're still kind of – they're optimistic it's going to go through for both of them. More so Jackson more than Emmanuel right now because of the situation. But right now it's kind of fuzzy for both right now.
Yep. And like I said, I'm D-tackle with or without Jackson is still strong. I mean, you know, we got Fisk there too and all those. So I think that's the strength. As long as we can stop receivers running wide open across the field, I'll be happy. With Fuller.
Well, guys, that's going to kind of wrap us up. It was a great show. For everybody that watched, everybody that commented, viewed, we appreciate it. Taylor, you want to tell everybody before we sign off where they can see you, where they can catch your content at, and all that?
Yeah. So I do most of my content, or I started out on Instagram. I just recently got 17,000 on there, so growing remarkably on there, trying to get as much as I can. I don't really care too much about follower counts. I just want to have people share my passion in regards to Florida State football, because like I said, I want to get my name out in front of as many people as I can just to showcase passion. And we talked about the Seminole Boosters, joining the Seminole Boosters. I just want people to understand that Florida State football is a livelihood that I want to live through and live my life through, because it's what makes me happy and makes me enjoyed with some of my hobbies that I have. And then you go over to my Twitter account as well. I try to put some edits on there, some articles as well that I write every so often. I get on Facebook, but I'm still navigating the whole Facebook thing. I don't really know how to reach out an audience like I do on Twitter and Instagram. So maybe y'all might have to teach me some pointers on that to figure that out. But
is it because we're old?
I mean, like I said, I'm 26, so I'm learning. I'm slowly getting there. So I'm getting to that point in life where I got to get – I'm closer to 30 now than I am 20, so we're getting there. But, you know, we'll kind of figure out that process, and we'll figure out the following type of situations and groups to join and all of that stuff. But I really appreciate it, guys. It was a blast. I never would have expected – I've always seen the Champions Way Sports edits and everything. I thought they were very, very impressive in terms of just outlining, you know, just the passion and the, you know, the importance of Florida State Athletics, because I think it's very important to bring that brand together. And I think it's an exciting thing. Never a competition with me against any other FSU media outlets or anything like that. It's all a family at the end of the day, and we all just want to see Florida State be successful. So I think that's very important.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's not a competition. It's a family. Hashtag all the time, no family. Mm-hmm. Some people can say, you know, it's not competition or whatever. They, you know, they'll lie through their teeth. But for us, I can speak for myself. It's not. I mean, I had got you on. I've had Jesse on from Plant the Spear. We're actually planning a after the spring game kind of big panel. Still got that in development with other live streamers, podcasters. You know, Patrick and Matt will be on. Me and you spoke about that. But guys, yeah, I mean, we're going to go ahead and sign off, guys. And like we ended all every time, you know, go Noles.
Go Noles. 25, 20, 15, 10.